In her new memoir, Cherie Blair says as a girl growing up in a Catholic working-class neighborhood in Liverpool, she never dreamt she'd end up married to a prime minister. Actually,
when I was 14, I told the rather astonished classmates in my history class that I was going to be the first British woman prime minister.
Of course, that honor went to Margaret Thatcher. But it would be Cherie Blair's husband, Tony Blair, who would deliver the country from the conservative Thatcherites back to the Labour Party. His young family was the picture of modern Britain, and Cherie Blair, a professional, a successful lawyer. In the years ahead, she would stand by her husband's side through a terribly unpopular war, and triumphs as well. She writes about this in her memoir, Speaking for Myself. Here, she remembers the day in 1997 when she and her husband entered the residency of the British Prime Minister, their new home, for the first time.
We hadn't had really any sleep because the election results come out overnight. And in the morning, we were expected to go to meet the Queen and then come in to number 10 Downing Street. So I said this: "Nothing can describe my mixture of emotions as the door closed behind us. Not only awe in the historical sense, the knowledge that everyone from William Pitt to Churchill and Attlee had been there, but anxiety that their baton, heavy with responsibility, had now been passed to Tony. There was also an undercurrent of unease. I felt like the unnamed narrator of Daphne du Maurier's Rebecca must have felt when she first arrived at Mandalay as a bride. As the new Mrs. de Winter, she might have been the mistress of the house on paper, but in reality she was utterly powerless, because she had no idea what she was up against." And I was to find, actually, that I had no idea exactly what I was up against either.
Was there... Now, I have to ask, there's not a name exactly, is there, for the wife of the Prime Minister? I mean, it's not the First Lady.
No, no, the First Lady is technically probably Prince Philip, because he is the spouse of the head of state, the Queen. Mm. But he doesn't go by that name for obvious reasons.
Tell us how you met Tony Blair, fellow barrister or lawyer, as we would put it.
Well, he indeed was a fellow barrister at that time, and that we first met in rather strange circumstances, because I didn't have much money. I was applying for a scholarship, and I was sitting down ready to go to the interview. And next to me was this rather extraordinary young man. He had what looked like a haircut that had been produced with a pudding basin. Do you have that concept?
Bowl.
a pudding bowl? Absolutely. And in fact, I later on discovered that the week before he'd had his hair down to his shoulder blades, but he'd had it cut off in order to come and try and get this scholarship. And he had on the most traditional suit you could possibly imagine. And he also had a very received pronunciation accent, which he had knocked into him having been in Oxford. And when I sat next to him, he being, as he still is, the most charming of men, asked me what I was going to be doing in the next year.
As it turned out, they both thought they would be studying law under the same renowned barrister, a kind of residency, a chance to be trained in a highly coveted position by a great lawyer.
He had said he'd partly promised it to somebody else, but he would get rid of him. And yet I discovered at that point that the two of us, in fact, were most unusually going to share the same trainer.
So you were rivals.
We definitely were rivals. But, you know, in the end, that Blair charm managed to undermine my desire to beat him in the Chambers race, and ended up, of course, with us being partners for life.
Now, you write of Tony Blair that he cared more about religion than anyone you had known except priests. He chose to be a politician. Was that a combination that was particularly compelling to you?
I think so, because I had been brought up in a tradition which was rather on the liberal Catholic side, and the idea that the social work of the church was a very important part of bringing its mission to the poor, treating everybody as of equal worth and dignity. And I was very keen on that. And though when I was in university, I never really talked to many people about religion. And indeed, I wasn't always a good girl who went to church every week. But curiously, when I met Tony, it was one of the things we started to talk about, our shared interest in the Labour Party, and in bringing social justice not just because of a political imperative, but also because of a moral imperative, because of the belief in everybody being entitled to the best possible life chances. And Tony remains very interested in that. And of course, I was delighted when, after he stood down as Prime Minister, he actually formally joined the Catholic Church, where he'd been, of course, attending with me and our children ever since they'd been born.
Could Tony Blair not have officially become converted to Catholicism while he was Prime Minister?
Well, for a long time, it was actually forbidden for a Catholic to become Prime Minister, but that rule had actually been changed in the 1980s. But still, the idea that a Catholic could become Prime Minister when the Prime Minister recommends to the Queen, who becomes Archbishop of Canterbury and appoints various of the archbishops in the Church of England, was still regarded as something that was a disadvantage. And indeed, during the election campaign, a number of the Tory papers, the Conservative papers, pointed out that Tony was virtually a Catholic because I was a Catholic and the children were Catholic. And I'm sure they did that because they thought that that was a disadvantage for a Prime Minister.
Do you miss 10 Downing Street? It's been about a year and a half.
Yeah, I miss the people in 10 Downing Street. I hope that in the book I give the impression that it's a strange sort of extended family, because I live there with my three and then my four children, and there are 250 people who work in Number 10. The people who run the house, the messengers who bring the tea around, and the wonderful Downing Street switchboard. If you've ever rung Number 10, you will always get the most fantastic service from switch, as we call them.
Well, I must do a little...
Ring them up and say, Cherie said how marvellous they were. They'll be fine.
Cherie Blair's memoir is out this week. It's titled Speaking for Myself, My Life from Liverpool to Downing Street. And this is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Thank you.